Now, I want to go to Olivia Rooney because there's a family forum meeting taking place in Tuam last Thursday, and Minister Anne Rabbitt was in attendance at it. But Olivia sits up to me first, then I will go to the Minister. Olivia, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today on the programme. You and I have spoken many, many times, and you're a trooper, really, to try and get the rights for people. What happened last Thursday? Or it was a family forum meeting, was it?
That's correct, Keith. And I suppose to even get back into that family forum proved to be challenging. So if it's okay for me to just take you back, I spoke with you last December and we were just a day ahead of taking protest outside of the Grove
That's
in Tuam.
Right.
I suppose the findings from that was that there was going to be an independent review carried out, which we were pleased that we were getting a reaction, I suppose, from our protest.
What were you looking? Let's go back to December. What were you looking for again?
Well, basically for our children's rights.
Services. And
for services, correct, Keith.
Yeah.
You know, our children are being neglected, and I'm comfortable to frame it as negligence. It's abusive, to say in the least. This generation feel abandoned by the state. We are one family of 750 families that are supposed to be in receipt of services through this framework, CD&T. We fall under CD&T 7. There are 91 of these CD&Ts nationwide.
Such red tape.
Correct, Keith. And to be honest with you, it seems apparent that Tuam seems to be the worst of those CD&Ts.
I thought there was progress being made, but go to last Thursday then. What happened at the family forum meeting?
So last Thursday, we found ourselves back in the room in Athenry. The family... and also, I suppose, a number of people had supported us in inviting the Minister, Anne Rabbitt, to join us. So we got in there, and what it felt like was going to be death by PowerPoint. It felt like we were going to be blinded by figures yet again.
Not by the Minister?
Not by the Minister, no. The interesting thing is that the HSE held the top of the room initially, and when they became aware of the Minister's presence, there was an attempt made to pause the forum, which immediately causes me concern. You know, I would expect that these are counterparts, that they would be liaising with each other and supporting each other in getting us the services that we require for our children. And in fact, it nearly feels like that we are, I suppose, in the centre of an ongoing dispute between
power.
HSE power. Absolutely.
Power struggle between.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Keith. Yep.
Let me go to Minister Anne Rabbitt, who kindly indeed has joined us this morning. Minister, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith, and thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. This power struggle, and this is not healthy. It's not your fault, but it's not healthy.
Well, I suppose, really, to be honest with you, I came at the request of the families. I was there on time and everything else like that, and I didn't set up the room. And I don't, you know what I mean? So, like, the impression that was given to me that was that the families didn't want me there till 10 past 12. And that's not the case. That became very apparent during the meeting. And the families that invited me for the whole meeting. I went in the capacity as to listen, as I did with Councillor Joe Sheridan. It was to listen and to take my own notes to see. It was my first family forum meeting ever to attend, Keith, in the entire country. I felt it was incumbent on me because, first and foremost, it's down the road for me. They're my constituency. It's a duty of me to represent the people that elect me. So it's a duty of me to attend where there's a crisis. And I suppose really that the parents spoke out themselves. They wanted me to stay. They wanted me to see the PowerPoint, and they wanted actually me to understand, I suppose, as well, their frustrations. And it was very, very clear. I don't wish there to be any power struggle between myself and the HSE. I have a good working relationship with Mary O'Halloran, head of disability, and previous to that with John Fitzmaurice. So I don't want there to be any sort of presentation that there was a power struggle, but there was no doubt. Perhaps I wasn't requested to be in the meeting before 12 o'clock.
Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. You know what I mean? And again, I think it's fair for me to extend our gratitude to the Minister for making herself available. And that was our understanding also, that the Minister
Why was the timing, Olivia? I mean, the Minister got there on time, got there, but why was she not needed until 10 past 12, or who?
That's our question, you know, and that's my personal concern is that, why was the Minister not made feel welcome into the room? We had invited her and she had honoured our request, and for that we're grateful.
But Anne, did you go in? Because you're not the type of one to stand outside the door waiting for permission.
Of course I went in, Keith. Of course I went in.
I wouldn't expect
that. And
Anthony
I got my chair and I sat down the back of the room, and to be fair to poor Carolyn, I said, do not make a fuss. do not disrupt the style of the meeting. I'm there to listen. And to be fair to Pádraig from the HSE, he sat down beside me, between myself and Joe Sheridan, he sat down. People were face forward, so they didn't know I was in the back of the room whatsoever, okay? Mm-hmm. Olivia had said hello to me, and she was well aware of where I was. And they let it flow, but eventually it became apparent that the meeting was going to have to be stopped and they would have to pause the forum because now and I was in the room, it wasn't a family member, and nearly to take the State of the Union address from the minister and she'd leave again. But to be fair to the parents, they voted I stayed, they continued the family forum, and then they would take questions from me as part and parcel of the family forum.
Forgive me now, and I'm not taking it all together, not all the time. Well, why would they pause a meeting because you were in it? Is it because it wasn't pre-approved at government level?
Not at all, Keith. To be honest with you, I don't know. Look, at the HSE, you'll have to answer that for themselves. I was quite happy to interject, partake in whatever so wish that the people in the room wanted me to participate. Mm-hmm. I'm confident in my role, Keith. I understand what's happening. And I think sometimes communications isn't the best. This is one of my biggest arguments with the HSC all along. Communications isn't the best. And if you don't communicate clearly with everybody, if you don't let everybody know what's going on, you create this vacuum. And that's unfair on the parents. It and that was one of the biggest talking points that came out the other day. Poor communications.
It is, but I mean, Olivia Rooney sits here on her own time again, drove herself in from June, sitting opposite me and talking about the same stuff that we've been talking about for quite some time. And all she wants, simply, is services for her children, for her child. That's all they
Absolutely,
want.
Absolutely, Keith. Yeah.
It's not, they don't want to win the lotto, they don't want to win anything. They just want services.
And I suppose, Keith, when I did get the opportunity to talk to Olivia and all the other people in the room, like I explained that we are after having a very successful recruitment campaign. 500 people are after coming forward to say that they want to work in the CDNT teams. 80 of them have made themselves available for our area of where interviews are taking place at this moment in time. There is some recruitment. The derogations have arrived in for some of the posts for the CDNT 7. And there is progress being made. Okay, not at the pace that we need to, but I also have a second derogation for Galway where the panels don't exist. So if you're living in Longford and you want to return back to Galway and you're number 99, you can apply to come back to Galway and we'll take the hand off you to put you on a team. So there was three different parallels. So I need to explain that while it might seem like a power struggle, there's an awful lot of good work going on behind the scenes with the HSE and my department and myself leading it to ensure that we deliver services, that we ensure that actually we get our teams filled up. And that's why Bernard Gloucester gave me a second derogation. The second derogation was to ensure that we use the panel system to fill all of our teams and we get to a 90% capacity of staff on our teams. That's where we want to. We want to get delivery of services for children. Mm. We need to get, and you know what then, Keith, I can do? I can hold everybody to account when I have 90% staff, because then I can say is, why aren't we seeing more kids? Why isn't there more children going through? I can then hold people to account. But when you don't have a full team, it's very hard to hold people to account.
I understand that. Olivia, you're listening to the minister. And you're the parent here. You're the one fighting.
Yeah, and again, you know, I suppose I can't help but wonder, like, do they have any clear accountability for the figures that they're throwing at us? We're hearing figures, but my challenge in that is that my child is not and shouldn't be seen as a statistic,
as a number. No.
She should be seen as a little person that deserves her rights, you know, her human rights to mm-hmm. be met. I suppose, again, if we were to go by the figures that we were given last week, it would suggest that there's 75 cases per SLT.
What's an SLT?
A speech and language therapist.
Okay.
There was a census, I understand, carried out under the HSE staff. It was carried out last October. Apparently, it's still not complete and it's still not being validated. So that would suggest that the minister hasn't actually got those figures in front of her. So can we really say what the vacancy rate is? Can we really say what staffing is required? There's a big area of concern. Is my child on a waiting list? And where is she sitting on that waiting list? You know, what are the accurate figures of how many children are actually waiting for speech and language, for example, Keith? You know, we're getting percentages. Okay. We're not getting transparency. We're not getting any, I suppose, clear measure as to where we sit in all of these waiting lists that seem to be never ending.
Minister, I wouldn't expect you to have them at the tip of your tongue, but I mean, can you go back to the HSE and ask them for these figures?
Absolutely, Keith. And I suppose really what Olivia's hitting on there is a really important part of the meeting the last day. The lack of clarity around, A, am I on a list? B, I didn't receive a letter to either attend the meeting, or am I aware I've heard nothing in the guts of 3 or 4 years? And if I am, am I a case that's opened, or am I an unopened case? Like, not all the cases in that CD&T team are opened. And that was a huge boiling point of frustration, that how can you mark what's urgent? How can you know when you're going to get seen to if all the files aren't opened? And that's something I am going to work with the local HSE, Porrick and Mary, to ensure all files are opened at speed, to know exactly that we have everybody captured and when they will see sight of services and what service will look like to the little people. That's the most important piece here, is what does a service look like? It's not a letter arriving out saying, we have now opened you and we'll be talking to you next number of weeks. That's not a service. It is, when is that face-to-face going to start?
Sorry, Olivia.
Keith, if I might ask the minister, like, what is the definition of an open case? Is that a 1 hour service that then goes, you know what I mean, that we get 1 hour of service and then we hear nothing again? Are we then deemed as an open case on that basis? You know, so we the parents would love a real concise and clear definition as to what receipt of service is and what an open case actually is and looks like.
Minister?
Yeah. Well, to me, definition of a case that is open and active is a child and a family that's receiving a service. That's not a letter in the post, Keith.
Minister, in your view, is a service just a group therapy session? Is that a service? You know, or is it a parent training where we are expected to take the reins off the therapist and actually fulfil the role of these therapists that are not being made available to our children? Or is it a one-to-one individual therapy session, which is what our children need on a consistent basis for them to progress?
Minister.
And Olivia hit the nail on the head. It's needs-based. The child needs SLT, the child should be getting SLT. If the child needs physio on a one-to-one, the child should be getting it. If it is group therapy where parents are talking about behaviour piece, maybe that's a group therapy. But it actually has to be based on need. The child's needs has to be the paramount. That's the piece that has to be cracked. But I do agree with Olivia on one thing here. We need to understand, actually, what does it mean? And parents need to be communicated that to Keith very clearly.
Yeah, there just seems, I mean, I'm getting the passion from Olivia. I'm getting the passion from you, Minister. I'm getting all of that. But what I'm missing here is a solution. And getting the staff is one part of the solution. Getting staff like that. But again, but just to give the likes of Olivia and other parents a date as to when they will be in the service so that they can look forward to that date and move forward.
So there will be 5 additional staff on the teams, Keith, before the middle of May. Okay? 5 additional staff is my understanding on the teams before the middle of May. Then there's other staff to join the teams between then and the middle of June. We should be hitting our 90% staffing level, Keith. And actually, what I see as service is intervention. Is meeting the child's needs. I'm not a clinician by any manner or means, but I do believe when you have the guts of 30 therapists on a team, I would be expecting therapists to see children.
Olivia, just I'll have to close out. And I mean, the minister is very gracious to give us her time, and she has to be at a meeting. It should have been 10 minutes ago. What's your final words to the minister?
I suppose I just wonder, is there measures being implemented then to retain these staff? Because we already know that we have an issue with retaining staff also. So it's one thing getting the therapists into position, but are we actually going to make contracts appealing enough for them to stay with us? There's a huge retention issue under the CD&T7. And we have actually digressed in the staffing levels from October to March. We have gone down from 3.5 to 3. So there's a 3.5 vacancy rate again under the speech and language.
There's a lot of numbers being thrown there.
There is.
So, Minister, will you keep on top of it, if you don't mind, unless you have something you want to close out on?
No, Keith, I've given a commitment to the parents the other day and given a commitment publicly today on your station that I'm going to stay on top of this. I plan to attend future family forum meetings. I plan to hold myself to account. I plan to hold the HSE to account. I plan to deliver services. And for parents who are listening in that aren't on the CD&T team, that are also on the Galway East team or the Roscommon team, I will hold all to account, as I will do the 91 other teams. But I am prioritising the Tuam team first.
All right, Kenny, just very briefly, Noel Thomas told us on this programme he's resigned from Fianna Fáil. Donna, have you got that news yet? What's your reaction to that?
Look, I am only after hearing Keith, and I'm sorry to see Noel go. He started in the council with me back in 2014. No more than myself, not afraid to speak his mind. He'll be a loss. And I'm sorry to see him go, as I am also sorry to see Seamus Walsh.
All right, Minister Anne Rabbitt, thank you, and apologies for the delay in getting you back to your desk and your meeting. Olivia, there you have it. It's as good as we can do today, but the Minister, when I spoke with her yesterday, she said yes, she would come on, so hopefully that energy will continue.
And Keith, let it not be, missed that I'm extremely grateful to the minister for making herself available this morning, and also last Thursday, the minister did bring in a sense of hope to the room last Thursday for us, and we are grateful. But gratitude is one thing, words are one thing. We need it. I suppose words are only words without actions, Keith.
No, but
and until it reaches service level, our children will continue to suffer.
You've got great fighting spirit in you, so keep it up. It don't look much longer you can do it though.
Well, look at it. Historically, that's kind of what's happened. Somebody will step forward and they will, I suppose, try to advocate for what are our children's rights. And it often just, I suppose, dissolves because we run out of energy. It's your previous speaker spoke about loneliness. Like, it's a very isolated thing to find yourself caring for a child with additional needs. Mm-hmm. The demands are already great. And for us to have to go and fight to this capacity, like, it's unreasonable. But as Councillor Noel Thomas said, like, we have to stand up and count it to try and create real change. So that's what I'm hopeful for.
All right. Would you ever go into politics?
Well, never say never, Keith. Never say never.
Listen, Olivia Rooney, thank you for joining us today. Minister Anne Rabbitt, thank you for joining us as well today. Now, a very good morning to you. You're ready for the unforgettable adventure. Arran Island Ferries and Ord Aine Indeed House have teamed up to offer you the ultimate Arran Islands getaway. You and your favourite travel companion will embark on a journey from Galway Docks or the picturesque Ross Aviel to the rugged beauty of Inishmore and the Arran Islands Ferries. And the overall winner will also enjoy a one-night stay, perhaps at the end of the week, in Ord Aine B&B, who are celebrating 40 years of hospitality, excellence, and it promises not just to be a stay, but an experience steeped in comfort and tranquility, with breathtaking sea views there as well. So I've got a daily prize of ferry tickets for two people from Ross Aviel Ferry to any of the three islands, valid year-round for 1 year, and are indeed from Galway City Docks to Inishmore and the Cliffs of Moher. Now, it starts this coming Friday 29th and runs right through until the 22nd of September from Galway City, or year-round from Ross Aviel, subject to availability. So once you hear the cue to call, I'm going to play it for you now, and then when you hear it again, you get texting us to 086 38 33 553 or WhatsApping us to that number as well. When you hear this, and quite simply, you can get further details on what we're talking about from the website of the wonderful people in Ord Aine Bed and Breakfast, and indeed the wonderful people indeed from Arran Island Ferries. And they've got a very interactive website there for you. So once you hear that again, I wonder, will we do it? Will we or won't we? Make it easy for you on Monday morning, so we will. But if you want to get entering, do so now. I'll play the cue to call again tomorrow and every day this week. But I won't tell you I'm playing it. Just today, to be nice to you on a Monday, we're giving you a chance to get in to win a pair of tickets. And then what we're going to do is we're going to put the five winners of the pair of tickets on a daily basis into a pot. And then we're going to pick one, and that person will be getting themselves that overnight stay in the wonderful Ord Aine Bed and Breakfast in Inishmore. Now, I want to move on today on the programme because we have lots more to get through. I'm joined by Ethna Nidunica, who joins me in studio because we're looking at the Economic Symposium, and Ethna joins me today. Ethna, morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Good to see you again. Thanks for joining us today as well. Economic Symposium, and you're bringing them to Carna.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the idea of the Cush Secorlach Plan Gnivioch Irisanioch. Irisanioch, as you know, is good here on Carner area out there, but it's also the Connemara Lore area. So what we're doing is looking at all the opportunities that are there in terms of employment, what actually is happening there and what could happen there. So really that's what the symposium is all about.
And there's a lot happening currently there, but more could happen, I'm sure you would say back to me.
Absolutely. Yes, particularly in relation to, we have particular themes. We have, say, tourism, we have the marine sector, we have the media sector, the Irish language sector, of course, and they're primarily the main areas where there is growth, I suppose. And we're kind of looking at that. It's an opportunity to get together, to network, to see, well, what is happening, what could happen, who are the players, and how can we make sure that the area continues to grow and that people can live there sustainably and, you know, the kind of employment and stay there and, you know.
But again, I mean, the key players in this would be the likes of Galway County Council, Udaros na Gaeltachta, and many other government bodies as well who need to rally around and support this.
Absolutely. Well, the symposium itself is going to be opened officially by Thomas O'Sheehan, the CEO of Udaros na Gaeltachta, and they are very invested in the whole area of employment and employment opportunities in the area. So they're there. You have T.G. Cahir there, Alan Esselmont, because media, of course, and the whole, you know, T.G. Cahir and the Irish language programmes, etc., and the growth there, particularly for young people as well. There's a lot of opportunities that people need to be aware of, I suppose, and see what could happen there. We also have Gareth McDonagh from RNG there. He'll be there talking about, you know, what's happening in the whole, in the radio space, and there may be opportunities for people, young people, to get involved in that. Any age, not necessarily young. The other thing is that if the whole idea is to kind of look at, you know, small businesses as well. You could have an idea for a business, and how do you go about it? How do you grow it? So we'll have Grow Remote there. We'll have Cumasu there. Cumasu is a program between ATU and Udaros na Gaeltachta, and like women in business. How do you start? How do you develop it? How do you bring it from A to Z? You know, to grow the business.
But what are the? I mean, it's a loaded question. I think I know the answer. But what is limiting the success and future growth for the area that we're talking about? I would say housing could be, because it's very difficult to get housing in that general area, and with enurement clauses and all that go with it, it might frighten people off.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very frustrating, actually, and it's frustrating for people who are from the area and want to build there on their own land. That's a key question. It's something that we have to look at, and we have to look at it strategically. There's no point in talking about developing, you know, an industry, particularly
tourism. But if you've got land, if you have land in the area, or family have land, or grandparents have land, and you want to locate there, and you want to be part of this economic symposium that we're talking about, I mean, the planning laws are in your favour.
We know that, but we also need to be able to influence it. We have to get together and see how we can make a difference. You know, we can't just allow it to kind of not happen. We have to see what...
You can't allow it to control you, I suppose, what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We have to see, you know, because it has a direct impact on things like the schools, for instance, children, numbers in the schools and that. So how do we make sure that people can stay in the area? People who want to build on their own land, people who want to live there, have their families there. That is really very important to us in this part of Connemara.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not just a place that you'll, you know, drive through. We want to live there. We want our families to live there. So, yeah, it's a big question. And it's a question that we have to really get to grips with and make sure that we can influence policy, because, you know, otherwise it won't work, people.
So can I ask you, just currently, if you are from the area and your family has land, and you have a housing needs assessment, can you get planning?
You can. You well.
I'll go away from planning. I promise you, I'll go away from that's after this.
You
but
get.
I, it's,
you. You.
It's the elephant in the
you'll,
room.
You'll
now.
Jump through a lot of hoops. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, to get planning on your own land, you'll have to keep at it, and eventually you might be successful. But I think the whole idea is, if the area, if it's at all suitable, then you should get planning on your own land, and in fact, it's a priority. So we really do want people to listen to what we're saying, that we want sustainability, we want sustainable growth here. And to do that, we want people to be able to live there and have their families there. And planning is a key factor, whether it's for your own house or for a business, you know. It's important.
It is, yeah, it is. So so this is running, so it is, you know, on the 26th of March. Again, running from 10 until 2 p.m. Can anybody else get involved in this?
Absolutely. We'd love to see everybody. It's open to the public. It's free. And it's up on Eventbrite. And the focus, as I said, it's because it's an economic symposium. We're actually looking at people with business ideas as well, but not necessarily that. If you have an interest in living out in the area, We'd like to see you attending and have an opportunity to voice your opinion, because we'll have questions to the floor from the guests. We'll have guest speakers on the various themes, and then we'll have what we call a Mentimeter, and the questions will be put to the floor. You'll get an opportunity to answer those. See, at the beginning, what is your vision for this area? And did, at the end of the day, did you get the information you need, you know, and where do we go from here? How do we move forward from here?
So it's tomorrow. So when and how can they register for this, and where exactly is it taking place in Carna?
Okay, it's in the Unad Cuivnachon na Niumarcach in Carna, which is the immigration centre there in Carna. And it'll be on from 10 until 2. And what's important as well, Keith, is that we'll have Bad Dog Media there as well. So if you have a little business, they'll do a workshop with you. And that's funded by you, the Ross and the Gaeltachta, to kind of support you to develop your growth, to look at how you're getting your message out there in relation to your business. And maybe you could, you know, they could give you tips on how to improve that. And that's part of it as well. But the whole thing is, we'd like to see Muinster and the Háite, the people of the area, coming in, joining the conversation, and just seeing how we can work together to make sure that this area continues to grow and, you know, develop in a sustainable way, in a way that supports the traditions, the culture, the Éireacht of the place, really. That's really what we're talking about.
Are you going to guarantee sunshine?
I'd love to. Unfortunately, it's difficult.
Out there, I would say, well, yeah, but it's a beautiful part of the world. It really is. But it's,
absolutely.
I think if the likes, you've got the support of the Ross Galway County Council and others as well, I think that makes it, it makes it easy. And again, remote working is something that has been a huge, huge, there's been a huge growth in it since COVID and all of that. And what a nicer place to work.
Absolutely. And we will have a workshop there, a presentation on Grow Remote. We have Joanne there from the Grow Remote organisation. She'll be telling you how you can actually live there in Irasanioch or the Connemara Lawr area, and, you know, work from home. I mean, it would be a perfect solution for people as well. Maybe have children and can't, you know, take, maybe there isn't an ability to kind of work from home and work in the business, you know, so you can you can share that.
It opens up opportunities for everyone.
Absolutely really does. Yeah, no, it's great.
Ethna, thank you, Dick, for joining us. That's taking place. That economics symposium is taking place tomorrow in Uncarna. If you want to get further details on that, you can just go along. Or what website would the best website be?
Well, really, if you go up to Eventbrite, you could get Symposium Economic Carna, and it'll pop up, you know, and it's there. And it's also on the Cuisce Comhairle Gníomhach Iarsaigneach. But I'd also like to say that this symposium is supported by FCL, which is Forbert's Connemara Lawr, and Afig Plan Old Sangha. So they'll have it on their website as well.
Right.
So you'll get the information there.
Well done. Keep in contact. Let us know how it goes. And I hope indeed that such discussion will stimulate further growth in the area as well. Thank you, Ethna, for popping into us today. Quick commercial break, and we're back just after these. I'm going to do this once more. I love doing it because I love the sound of it. There you go. Now, that's in association with the team at Aran Island Ferries and the crew on Inish Moor, Ordania, a guest house celebrating 40 years in business as well. So, you could be winning yourself a pair of tickets each and every day this week. At the end of the day, then, we'll be giving you a chance to have one night stay with the crew at Ordania Bed and Breakfast. And again, that's valid between March and October. And again, subject to availability and terms and conditions there as well. There you go. Anyway, I'm getting confused, but I want to go to Deirdre Brown, because Deirdre Brown is a barrister and she's joining us now on behalf of the Bar of Ireland and Bar Council of Ireland. And I was reading the Irish Times, so it was last week, and the reassignment of divorce, judicial separation and cohabitation proceedings to the district court will add further delays to the A&E of the court system. It doesn't make any sense to me, but the Bar Council of Ireland is calling for urgent amendments to the Draft Family Courts Bill 2022 to avoid the creation of a two-tier family justice system. And Deirdre joins me on the line today. Deirdre, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today. Will you simplify this for me currently? Up to this point, where was this dealt with, the divorce, judicial separation and cohabitation? In what court?
Right. So the way the system works at the moment is that the cases that you've just outlined cases where there's a relationship and a family, a relationship breakdown and a reorganisation of families required, those cases are all dealt with in the circuit court at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the Family Courts Bill, which you've described in your opening, has very lofty ambitions. It aims to reform the family law court system. It aims to put families at the centre and users at the centre of the court system. But we're very concerned that in the middle of the bill is this proposal to reallocate the divorce, separation, cohabitance cases to the district court, and that is a disconnect, if you like, between what the bill aims to achieve and what it will achieve if it is brought into law.
And can I ask you then, just from my own point of view, but will they be putting extra staff, as in judges, and staff into the district courts purely to handle family law cases?
Well, it's so yes, the bill anticipates resources, but I think that's to look at the problem from the wrong perspective. I think you have to start by looking at what court is suited to dealing with what issues. And people who need the involvement of family law courts to sort out what's happening in their lives need to be directed to the court that's fit for purpose, the court that's suitable to deal with whatever the issue they're confronting is. Okay. So at the moment, we have an overworked, under-resourced district court. It functions to deal with single issue matters, Keith. So if you are looking for a safety order, a protection order, if you're looking for maintenance, you go into the district court.
Yeah.
You expect to get in quickly and to have that single issue dealt with after one or possibly two hearings. So as I say, that system is clogged at the moment, and an injection of more resources, more judges, would hopefully get that system moving more quickly. You then have the more complicated scenarios of a relationship breakdown, and they bring with them not just single issues, they bring with them lots of different strands which have to be dealt with and addressed, so that what was one unit can be disentangled and form two units.
Mm-hmm.
And those cases, if they need a court hearing, they need and deserve time. They need time afforded to them. And the district court is not designed, the district court is meant to be a quick in and out. It is not designed to afford people the sort of time that disentangling relationship breakdown and dealing with the matters arising in divorces and separation.
If I'm reading between the lines then, for the important ones there of divorce, judicial separation, all of that, you're saying that the higher court is needed.
Yes, exactly.
But you're saying that the district court, if it gets into the district, first off, if you're going into the circuit court, you do need to have a barrister to represent you and a legal representative. If you're going into the district court, a solicitor can represent you. So is that...
Not necessarily.
Correct me if I'm wrong, sorry.
Absolutely. People may prefer the advice of either solicitors or barristers in either court. And the more complex the issues, the more likely, for example, a barrister may become involved. But at the moment, at circuit court level, you have people, so you have many couples who they're simply looking, they've sorted everything out, they just want a divorce. And they themselves can go into the circuit court without any legal representation at all and get their divorce relatively quickly and cheaply.
But they don't all go like that, though.
Oh, absolutely not. No, they don't all go like that at all. But I'm saying that in the cases where people have managed to sort things out, they can get in and out of the circuit court very quickly.
Yes.
So just because, I suppose at the end of the day, what I'm saying, Keith, is just because a case is in the circuit court doesn't necessarily mean a barrister will be involved.
Okay. But why are they changing it then, can I ask?
That's the million-dollar question. There's been many looks at the family law court system going back over decades. And the most comprehensive deep dive that was done in terms of the structure of the courts was done back in 1996 by the Law Reform Commission. And at that stage, they concluded the allocation of jurisdiction, in other words, where a court is directed, is appropriate. And it recommended against moving cases to the district court. We haven't seen any evidence of why this proposal to redirect cases. We've seen no evidence of what it is anticipated the effect will be. Unfortunately, pre-legislative scrutiny was waived. I don't think there's been an impact assessment. So the rationale is not clear. It's certainly not clear to the Bar Council.
Is it working the way it is, can I ask you, Barrister Deirdre Brown?
Is it working the way it is? Well, I would not stand. I certainly think that anyone who has encountered the family law court system can see that the system needs work. It needs real reform. It needs more resources. It needs the capacity of courts expanded. And there are many, many improvements that the court system needs. But this is not one of them. And I cannot see this particular change, because I would call it a change rather than a reform, improving the experience of people as they are in the family law courts, or improve the outcome for them. Nor is there any evidence that it will reduce the costs. So this is certainly not, as I say, while I wouldn't say that the court system as it stands is perfect, this certainly won't render it any more perfect, Keith.
I mean, the district court as it is now, Gabby, with the days I felt could go in and sit down and watch the district court, Justice John Garavan, in operation, Lord rest his soul. But now they just seem to be chock-a-block and sitting for 2-3 days a week just to get through the list that they have there. And you've got prisoners coming in, prisoners going out, you've people up on various charges and otherwise. And then putting this into it, if it's working the way it is, Deirdre, why not just leave it there?
Well, certainly that's what we're calling for. And, you know, we would invite any politician who's considering bringing this into place to come down exactly as you've described to the district court on any day and see the conditions that people who are involved in that court have to face. And certainly this will not improve matters.
When is this due to happen, Deirdre Brown, can I ask you?
The bill is at the third stage now, and certainly when the legislation was drawn up, when the general scheme of the bill was drawn up, it was anticipated that it would be brought into force by the end of 2023. We're now sort of past the first quarter of 2024. I would say that they'll be looking seriously at whether or not to proceed with it during the lifetime of this, during the lifetime of this government.
And just going back to if from a monetary point of view, and I was reading that article in the Irish Times, that anything over €1 million, say in finances or property, that has to go to the Circuit Court. If I'm reading it right, anything less than that goes to the district. So you have the argument, just leave the whole lot in the district or in the circuit.
In the circuit court, yeah. Well, in allocating a case to any particular court, there are criteria, and the criteria that this particular scheme has is that where a case, judicial separation, divorce, cohabitants, involves land, and that land is worth up less than €1 million, it will go to the district court, regardless of the complexities of the case generally in terms of complex children issues, complex pension issues. So it's for most families, when we're talking about land, and Keith, we're talking about the family home.
Yeah.
So again, you have a system envisaged by this bill where people whose family homes are worth less than €1 million and on the market will be directed to the district court, where they'll have their cases dealt with in a summary manner, whereas you will have people whose family homes are worth more than €1 million that will end up with the care and consideration that the case deserves in the circuit court. And I think that at the heart of it, that the idea that people would be discriminated against in that way is one of the most, I'm sure it's an unintended consequence of the bill, but it's a very worrying one.
And the Bar Council of Ireland, are they 100% against this? And if they are, they've got some power in there, because they are the legal brains of the country.
We're delighted with that description, Keith. But certainly, we're very much behind and very supportive of the idea that family law and the family law court system needs reform. We're very against this particular aspect of this bill, and we feel that the allocation of jurisdiction in the courts as it stands at the moment is appropriate, and even having this row away from should be addressed.
Okay, we're losing you there, but we've thank you for joining us today. And Deirdre Brown, who's a barrister and talking to us on behalf of the Bar Council of Ireland, thank you indeed for joining us today. It's complex, and it's not complex. And sometimes I question why various aspects of our legislation is changed for the sake of changing it, just for the crack of changing it, and then just change it all, and then you confuse people, and then people are used to what the way it works, and then it's not working that way anymore. Now, Keith, the scholar, said the road from Kilimer to Kiltormer is in a very bad way. It's basically unpassable. Can you contact somebody to do something to sort it out? By the way, I was up near the Drum Cross over the weekend, and there's potholes, be damned, so there is, as you go from, if you come down from the fabulous facilities there, and you turn left to go onto the N59, just that whole general area there. If somebody has a few buckets of tar, would you throw it down, please, if you don't mind? And the July provision seems to be a problem everywhere. Some schools do it and some don't. Parents have an awful time trying to find someone to carry out the July provision for their children. They can do it in group sessions and do not have to go to a child individually. This should be compulsory, the scholar said. And other caller said to us, Keith, I'd like to go to the Aran Islands. Well, a lot of you did want to go to the Aran Islands. And literally hundreds of you sent in a text this morning. So tomorrow morning you'll have a chance to do it all over again. Keith, family law courts in Ireland are a joke. I've lost count of the amount of times that I've been in court fighting for child maintenance for my children's father. Currently owed over €29,000, which has built up over years. Last five times I've been in court, the father did not bother to turn up. He has plenty of money for gambling, alcohol, holidays, etc. Shameful why some men just don't care, this caller said. And the winner of the pair of tickets, courtesy of the team in Aran Island Ferries, the winner of the pair of tickets for today, for Monday the 25th, is Jimmy Griffin in Chantala in Galway. Congratulations to you, Jimmy, and we'll be getting those pair of tickets to you, and Siobhan will be in contact with you and make it work from there, but congratulations, and we'll do it all over again tomorrow. Somebody else wants to know about the meeting that's taking place, and the meeting that's taking place, and social action one, social inclusion one. Karen McHugh, you can ring Karen if you want on 098-36036. And that's for people coming home today. If you want to get further details on that, you can do so. But again, that number again is 098-36036. Somewhere in the middle of all of this, by the way, I got a text in. I'll find it during the 10 o'clock news. Yeah. The 11 o'clock news, what am I going to? I'm going to the 11 o'clock news, yeah. I'm that confused. But there was something came in there from a lady who wants to repatriate to Ireland. She'd been living most of her life in the UK. I think she's 79 years of age, and she's finding it very difficult to get back home to Ireland, and she's looking for assistance on it. Again, I would suggest, if you want to give Karen McHugh a call, you can do so. She's the CEO of Safe Home Ireland. Again, the number there is 098-36036. 098-36036. They're based in Mulranny, and I would suggest you give them a ring if you're working with that person. And let's see, can I find that as well? Again, but there's just so many texts coming in that it's difficult to try and keep an eye on the whole lot of them. I'd see, can I find it? But I would suggest you call that number. Yet to come to the programme, we have Galway Greats coming up just after the 11 o'clock news and sports today. And today we've got Margaret and Tom Duggan from Renmore. They will be our Galway Greats just after the news. Stay tuned.